Welcome back to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, the show exclusively for those in the equine assisted services community. But today, it's not just for the EAS folks out there. It's also for anybody in the nonprofit sector. I have Kimberly Thomas on today, and she was an absolute joy to talk to. She's the ED of Epic for Girls here in Omaha. It's an amazing organization. I will let her explain all of that to you in the show. But the reason I have her on is that she has over 25 years of experience in the nonprofit world, specifically with a passion for ensuring that executive directors and boards of nonprofits are equipped with all of the tools they need to succeed. She did a great presentation at the conference that we just hosted this last February. And after I saw it, I couldn't wait to have her on to share her with all of my listeners. So she's going to talk to us today about boards, obviously management, how to recruit for your board, terms and setting up the expectations. I have to give it away now, I guess. So much like when she presented at our conference, everybody wanted it to be two sessions because they learned so much from her at conference. And you guessed it, this podcast will also be two parts. I had too much information that I wanted to get to you folks in digestible parts. So you're going to want to hear the second half too. Next week, she's going to talk to us more about about salary, paying your employees, executive director burnout, and just more about how the board truly supports the ED to ultimately make sure that you have a thriving organization that's well-respected within your industry in the nonprofit sector. So enjoy this talk with Kim. I sure learned a lot, and I know for a fact that you will too. Thanks for stopping by the show, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are going to talk about board management today, and I'm looking forward to digging in. But first, why don't you introduce yourself, kind of give us a little history of how you ended up where you are now.
Yeah. So my name is Kimberly Thomas, and I'm the executive director of Epic for Girls. And Epic is it's an acronym that stands for Equal Play, Inspiring Confidence. And our organization is an equal play initiative, to break it down simply, equal play initiative that is ensuring girls of color have access, resources, and safe playing spaces to primarily access the benefits of sports, but also all the other life benefits that participation and building community offers young women. So that's what I'm doing now. Kind of how I landed here. Great question. I have been in nonprofit work and management my entire career. It has spanned kind of all underserved populations, marginalized populations. Started out in Lincoln after graduating from college, and have really found kind of my what makes me tick in advocacy. So most recently, I was the executive director at CASA for Douglas County, where I was for 10 years. And, you know, CASA, if you're not familiar, is an organization that advocates for youth in foster care. And I think being able to be an individual or an entity that gets to speak up is really like the whole purpose of the organization and our volunteers was to speak up and identify areas where things were not working or needed to change in order to amplify potential success. That was really a great space. And that's really where I found kind of my love of also board management and organizational infrastructure. And so that's kind of how I ended up here. I think a cute, fun story. I did meet my husband in sports. So when I moved to Omaha, I was just knew, I didn't know anybody in Omaha, and I had two young girls. And I knew that I wanted my kids to participate in sports. And so I got a part-time job at the YMCA. And I knew that would be a great way that my kids could find their friends. Mm-hmm. And also I could, you know, have fun and my kids could come with me to work. And so, yeah, I met my husband. He was a basketball official for the Y, and I was working one afternoon or morning at Buffett Middle School. So that's my YMCA success story. And so sports was a natural fit for me. I was an athlete in high school. My daughters both played. One of them went to college and played. And so moving into this role and kind of taking a piece of my advocacy and my love of that into sports was a really great fit.
God, I love when that happens.
Yeah.
I love that story for you. That's amazing. I think that so many of us, so many of the professionals listening right now can resonate with that because I am, a similar story. It's like you find the love, like I loved horses. That was the love of my life. And now I'm a therapist with horses and you put it together. And it's just like when those worlds collide and it works, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. You know, they say you don't work a day when you do what you love. And I think that's why I enjoy getting up every day. Cause I don't feel like it's work.
Yeah. So tell me about what you do, your role for the organization. You are primarily, do you do the board management and the infrastructure stuff like you were talking about?
Yeah. So, like I was talking about at CASA, when I took over the organization, we were real small and, it was primarily a founding board. And so one of the roles that myself and the board chair, that should ideally how it should be, right, is you need to have a really strong relationship. And we started that process of really diving into why do people join boards and who are the right people for our board, for boards in general, and how can they be successful? I think lots of people want to join boards and may see it as an opportunity to boost their resume. But I think it's really important for individuals who are in that position to understand the massive responsibility that they're taking on, but also how to help support and drive the work of the organization in a meaningful way. And that it's not about just showing up and sitting at the table, voting, yay or nay on things. It really is, learning how you can best support. And I'm one of those people that believes everybody has something to give, but you have to find where your spot is and be able to contribute meaningfully because nonprofits really rely on that work. Mm-hmm. And so if you're coming and just taking up time and space, it really can slow down the momentum and the ability to serve the target population. So when I came to Epic, similar situation, we have a founding board and we have worked over the last year to think about deliberately and intentionally think about the type of members that we need at this point in time, where the stage that we're at in the organization and what type of member that we're going to need to take the organization to the next level. And so we recently had kind of a change in leadership, which should happen in everybody's organization. And so this gave us an opportunity to start looking at who we needed in what seats. And so we've made some changes to the size of our board and the initiatives, so to speak, that they will be leading. There's only one staff member, which is me right now. And so there is a lot of ownership for that work, shared again, of course, with my board chair, but I don't really have staff and the luxury of having that right now, but that is one of the benefits that will come from really empowering the board. Mm-hmm. Is we will grow the organization and we'll grow it together.
Right. So tell me a little bit about, you mentioned that you guys have a founding board. I know that there are different types of boards. Can you give me a brief rundown kind of on which is what?
I think the major types are, your founding boards are your individuals who, right, that this is really how it gets started. You have an idea, you see a problem and you're like, we need to fix it. And they're so mission focused and they are the right people for that right time. And then oftentimes once we, hire an executive director and we start hiring staff, you need a board or you need members that what we would classify as a transition board. Mm-hmm. And you can go through these stages, you shouldn't go back to founding board, hopefully, but you can go back, you know, and you might jump into transition every now and then as you hop to new levels for your organization. But transition boards, you stay in these phases for quite a while, depending on your work and how much you're getting done, but you should, you're not going through them every 6 months. And then you move on to more of an institutionalized or governance board, and think about organizations that are 50, 100 years old. They have much more of a governance board or an institutionalized board where everything runs really smoothly. You have staff in places, you have your structures, your goals, all these things in place, and the machine is moving, and really they're your guardrails now for ensuring you're staying aligned with the mission.
That makes sense. So then is that how would you say that boards sort of morph as you grow, right? So, I mean, you obviously start at that sort of founding level where you're developing sort of those mission and ideas, and then it can, as the organization grows in time and experience, then that changes.
I think there's several levers that kind of influence where you're going to be at. So for us, that founding board, really, they were able to just passionately speak to the need in the community. They were experiencing that themselves, or were really closely connected with how that was impacting how the issue was impacting their community. And so I would say finances are one thing. So as you're either your need or your actual receipt of revenue starts coming in, you need to enhance procedures, right? You need to have higher level of accounting. You need to be potentially audits and really reviewing finances on a higher level monthly or in a really consistent basis, depending on what grants you're applying for, how that is impacting kind of your cadence of financial processes. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's one of them. But also as you start integrating programming or the primary book of whatever business you are doing, as you start adding the layers, again, maybe it's data, maybe it's public policy or legislative stuff, you start to see the need to have different people on your board. So you want to have accountants, potentially. You might want to have somebody that is really well-versed in legal issues or legislative processes. For us, we just recently, we voted on some board members, but they joined in a couple of weeks. We were really looking for people that had research or data backgrounds that could help us further look into that. So we're looking for content expertise for us right now, because we don't have the budget that would necessarily support outsourcing that or hiring that on a consistent basis. So some of those experts are able to either look at what we're doing and advise, or if we are outsourcing, they can look at those contracts and, are we asking the right questions? Are we looking for the right sort of deliverables for the organization? So I would say that's really how it changes. The more you grow, then your level of board expertise or board member changes, because it could look different, every 3 years or so. And so I think being really transparent with people when they come onto boards, that like, you're the right person right now, and you might not be the right person in 3 or 5 years, and that's okay. Yeah. But we are not expecting you to be everything. There's a time and place, and just like EDs outgrow organizations and staff sometimes outgrow organizations or vice versa. It's important to let board members know that too, because they are giving their time, they're volunteering, and it can feel either really great or really bad if you don't have that context, right? Mm-hmm. Because you want folks to know their contributions are really valuable.
Do most people have terms like for their board, like you come on to serve a board for 3 or 5 years, or you come onto a board until you are told you're not on the board anymore, that kind of a thing.
I think a lot of founding boards, and then we have some really institutionalized boards, right, that have large financial contributors or users of that particular. So when you look at arts, I'm just thinking about that one, for instance. Like, I know some arts organizations that maybe have people on them that are high users and contributors financially, and they hold a special place because of maybe their intimate knowledge, and they stay on for a long time. I think best practice would show you that it's important for you to have board terms. It's important for you to get new energy. Mm-hmm. It's important to revisit that. And so for us, and I think a pretty standard term is 3 years, and then being a renewable for an additional term. So being able to serve 3 to 6 years and getting that commitment up front, like understanding, like, we hope that you can serve at least your first term, but if you sign up for a second term, we want you here for the entire thing too. And then giving that person an opportunity. One, sometimes they just need permission to be able to leave, right? So at that 3 years to go, like, we really appreciate you if you want to stay. But having a strong board chair and nominating committee or whoever member is assigned to that, giving them permission that, like, if you feel like this is not, you know, filling your bucket, and you we're in spaces that you don't really feel comfortable, your skill set maybe is not working, then it's okay for you. It's okay for you to step away too. Mm-hmm. So 2-3 year terms is what we do. I think most organizations are right around there. They either 2-2 or 2-3. So that's, I would say best practice for sure.
Yeah. Are you looking for a leg up in communicating more effectively with participants in your therapeutic writing and EAL lessons? Teaching Aids for EAS comes to the rescue with a range of more than 70 visual aids designed specifically for our industry. Each one has been designed by a PATH International certified professional who understands the unique challenges that we face inside and outside the arena. Visit teachingaidsforeas.com today to shop their range of fun, scalable, and affordable products, including flashcards, posters, activity boards, PEX cards, handheld cueing paddles, arena games, and more. They also work directly with instructors and centers to design custom products and solutions. As a special treat for my Not Just a Pony Ride listeners, use code HETRA, H-E-T-R-A, for 10% off your order now through May 10th at teachingaidsforeas.com. So when you are looking for new board members, you know, either you're growing or replacing or whatever it is it typical to interview board members? You obviously extend invitations. Tell me about what that looks like, kind of recruiting a new board member.
Yeah, I think it can take a couple shapes, of course, because we always run into people through our work in community. And I've had, you know, plenty of people come up to me or board members and vice versa and say, oh my gosh, you would be so great. And again, if you're doing an assessment of what your board capabilities are, expertises are, you should have a good idea of the type of person in terms of skill set that you're looking for. And so when you run into that person, you might want to put in a plug. I think one thing that's really important, and it is important for the work that I do and Epic for Girls does, is that we are trying to create opportunities for individuals that also haven't had the opportunity because of sometimes, you know, being marginalized and not being able to, you know, not being invited or asked to serve on boards. And so one of the things that we are intentional about is making our board application front facing. So we put that on our website, and we make sure that we are clear about the expectations of a board and offer, you know, that as an open invitation to apply. So we might not know who you are because you might not be getting press. You might not be well known in the community, but that doesn't mean you're not good for a board. And I personally have experienced much more engagement from individuals who seek you out.
Right.
Versus I think a lot of nonprofits and maybe individuals that serve on boards, we kind of have this group of people that tend to land on boards and are asked to serve on multiple boards? And how do we spread that opportunity out and really elevate voices that, you know, have excellent, you know, experiences and come from communities in which we're serving. And so how do we, you know, make sure that, you know, we're getting a good representation and not just going to the same folks all the time and asking them to serve all these nonprofits. So yes, recruitment can take on a couple shapes. And I think, yes, an interview is absolutely important. Again, being as clear and as transparent as possible about what your board expectations should be. We've implemented report cards, which are really helpful and are used as a guide by our board members to know where they stand, to know, here's all the things that I need to do to be a successful board member. We kind of paint a picture for them and we allow them to show up in that space how they want, but, you know, how can you be successful? So we have partner organizations, 26 of them right now. And we say you need to participate in two of those, two of our partner events. So for some, that could be showing up to a practice. It could be showing up to a mentoring event that they're having or a camp. And for some, it might be showing up to a game at Omaha North High School or Omaha South. But again, just making sure that our partners know that we support them. So we kind of set a general expectation about here, we want you to do two of these things. How you find out how to do that is, you know, what fits best with you. And so people want to succeed. I think the natural human nature, people want to be successful. They want to contribute, but if not given and have, you know, having the right communication, people can feel and get disengaged.
You only know what you know, right? If you don't know you should be doing those things, but that's not the expectation, then, you know, you don't go out of your way to do that. And I think that you guys instituting something like a report card is very interesting, because we do staff reviews for paid staff and we do, you know, those types of things for those who have those expectations. So why wouldn't we do it for a board, even though they're not paid, right?
Right. And again, it just being very clear, if I don't know how to, if you in your mind say you need this drink and I bring a different drink, the intentions are there, but right, there's a mismatch in communication, mm-hmm. A mismatch in expectations. And so I think it's the right thing to do is to give people, as much, you know, information and guidance as you can and allow them to show up as authentically as they can to those expectations.
So who helps you set those expectations? Is that something that you do yourself, or does the board kind of, you know, collectively decide this is what we want to do sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think all of my answers when it comes to the ED and their role in the board and board management is all of that should be very collaborative with your board chair and with your board members depending on the situation. But doing that in isolation can really create, again, that mismatch in expectations. So we just sat down as a board and as the executive director and said, we've come up with a few ideas. What do you guys think of these? And we had a discussion around what do you think it feels like? What do you think it looks like? We ask our partner organizations. So depending on your constituents, engaging your constituents or your target population and asking them, what would it feel like to be supported? What, you know, what does that look like to you? And one of the reasons we instituted that one partner organization engagement was because they said they wanted to see us there, you know, at their events. They wanted that engagement. So that one was really driven from our partners saying, we just want Epic to attend some of our events. We want to have that support. And I think that beyond any financial support, just community support. And so, yeah, it's really a collective conversation. Of course, there are some real, I would say, kind of standard board expectations. We want you to attend meetings, you know, setting some sort of financial expectation, whether that's give, get, both. But then around these kind of more nebulous things, you know, what does engagement look like for boards? And it can be different for every organization, but definitely a conversation. And those are things that boards should be talking about. They should be talking about how are they functioning, evaluating themselves, really looking inward. Sometimes we think about that relationship as very transactional or one time, you know, we have a board meeting and we make a big decision and then, you know, it's very transactional, but it really should be much more engaged and conversational and talking about what does your organization look like from the outside and then from the inside and constantly evaluating that.
Right. So when we talk about like expectations for your board, is there a typical size? I know it's different for every organization, I'm sure. But like, if you think about expectation, you think about what types of folks do you have on your board, you know, finance or whatever it is, right? Because that all plays in together. So is there kind of a size or like a requirement for different types of folks you should have on your board as far as that goes?
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer with one universal answer.
Right.
But I would say, personally, I have found boards that are between the 11 and 15 really helpful. And again, it depends on how much work you're asking your board to do and how much, how engaged and what stage you're at. So early boards and very mission driven boards are often, you know, there all the time. They might be helping change light bulbs and they might be helping do all these other things and implement your early programs. And so you might see engagement might look very different at that stage. Mm-hmm. I think that transition phase, I think, is the more difficult one. My recommendation is get some of those infrastructure things in place before you make it super large, because then it's harder to maybe get consensus and get everybody in the room to agree, right? So get some of that initial infrastructure set up, expectations, and be open to change if right, you add some board members and you were like, oh, this looks a little different now. But I've found that having, you know, 11 to 15 members gives people the option that if they have to miss, then you're still going to be able to move business along. And I think that's the main thing, is that maybe you have a couple members that can't be there, but if you have such a small board, sometimes that can mean you can't move mm-hmm. on anything. You can't get consensus and you can't get majority. And so then you're stuck. And I don't know if one of your questions is going to be this, but I know I've been asked like frequency in meetings. And again, I think this kind of speaks to that, is if you are meeting maybe quarterly as a board and then you have a smaller board and then all of a sudden something happens and you have a couple members that can't make it. Now you've passed up a whole quarter where you could have made action. So I'm always in favor of meeting regularly, getting that routine kind of fixed in people's head, because a quarter can just be like, oh, you plan something and then you plan over your meeting and then you're kind of out of luck for that quarter. Right. So I'm a meet monthly. And even if we get the meeting done in 20 minutes or 30 minutes, that's better, because we're developing relationships and we're working as a team, even for those few minutes. And it really helps keep the momentum going. You can really lose momentum if you can't get everybody in the room when you need to.
Right. And that totally makes sense. I think the more often you can get together on some of those topics, the better, like you said, to keep the organization moving forward. So with these different types of boards, are there different things that our board should be helping us with? So I know there's like governance boards or advisory boards, like that type of a thing. I mean, how many decisions do our boards actually make for us as nonprofits, right? How do you decide that? Ooh, what a loaded question. And I hate to cut it off early, but you're going to have to tune in next week to hear Kim answer this question for us on what exactly should our boards be doing. We even get into the thick of it with setting salaries and how much conversation should your board really be a part of when it comes to setting those numbers for your staff, and a lot more, you know, how your board supports your ED and your organization to ensure that nobody feels lonely or burnt out or on an island sometimes as we feel in the nonprofit sector. So tune in next week to get the rest of this juicy episode with Kim. That's all for today. But until the next episode launches, scroll down to the show notes and click on the link to get plugged in with us on Facebook, Instagram, or our exclusive educational club at Patreon. This podcast is presented by Hetzer University, the educational arm of Heartland Equine Therapeutic Writing Academy in Gretna, Nebraska. Hetzer University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to the EAS community. Check out all the Hetzer University has to offer at www.hetzeruniversity.org.